You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Hello all, and welcome to our ostentatious swooning over Formula One's newest track, Estella Stateside, story of intrigue and barefaced rule-breaking that may well find its final chapter in this weekend's season decider at iconic Interlagos. To digest where F1 has been and where it goes from here, I'm delighted to be joined by my EDP F1 deputy team principal, Perry Hamilton.
It's a pleasure to be here, as always.
It's good
as
to see always. You. How are you feeling, Perry? I know you've been a bit under the weather.
A little bit under the weather, but nothing that some top quality racing couldn't help.
I bet it did help.
Lifted me a little bit, I have to say, yeah.
Good stuff. And also, beside me in the table here, in the F1 pod, it's Chief Technical Officer, David Tillier.
Hello.
He's laughing at that, that's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, I like that, I like that. It's a good one. Yeah,
I think we might keep these.
Yeah, it's a good sort of F1-based nickname game, that's good. Indeed. I like it.
Yeah. I suppose it makes me the team principal. Whether I'm Martin Whitmarsh or Tony Fernandez is probably up for debate.
As long as you're not Stefano Domenicali, I'm fine. Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Can't say what I really think about him.
Well, we will get into that and many things. As I said, Austin, Texas, the Circuit of the Americas, delivering a fantastic penultimate race of what is rapidly becoming a classic season, the 2012 season. Sebastian Vettel, still the championship leader with one race to go, but it is not all over yet. Lewis Hamilton, the winner in Austin. I don't know if we can say much about that other than the fact that he won and he won't taste victory again for a while, probably after the end of this season at Mercedes. We agree?
I'd say that's fair, but I would say that winning isn't... It's not like at least he turned up and he won and that's all we can say about it. He drove fantastically. He really did. You know, everyone thought the Red Bulls were going to be dominant. We all thought that the Red Bulls were going to be dominant. Vettel had led every single practice session and every qualifying session. He had been the fastest man on track. But then come the race, you know, he couldn't keep that up. Now, could you argue that the team maybe had a word with him and said, look, Seb, you know, if you are being passed, don't fight too hard. We've got to live to fight another day. Maybe they said that, but we all, having discussed this many times, we know the kind of racer Sebastian Vettel is. You tell him to back off, he's got the win in his pocket, he goes for the fastest lap. This is the kind of guy you deal with, and he is a racer. I think Lewis put in an absolutely tremendous performance. It's going to help him going forward. It's going to help Mercedes going forward, because the happier Lewis Hamilton is when he arrives at their factory, the better things are going to be. If he comes off the back of a disappointing end to the season and they don't get things spot on to start with, then it could all go downhill. But if you get a buoyant Lewis Hamilton coming in and there are some technical improvements made over at Mercedes next year, then who knows what we could see. You know, Lewis could drive the wheels off that thing.
We'll touch a bit on the Mercedes car in a bit. A great moment of Sebastian Vettel almost blubbing over the radio as he was overtaken by Lewis, effectively the defining moment of the race. Him and Lewis, their cars were perfectly matched, really, weren't they? They were trading times all weekend. Naren Kartikeyan held Vettel up because he physically couldn't get out of the way with the damned blue flags that I hate, thus ensuring that Lewis was close enough for once to use DRS and get past. Defining moment.
Yes, it was definitely a defining moment of the race. I think it was possibly an inevitable moment anyway. I think, you know, going back to what Ped said about him driving fantastically. I mean, that's shown that Lewis Hamilton, if you know, is the person, the probably the best suited person on the entire grid to potentially get a win with Mercedes. You know, I've been quite clear in saying that I don't think he will. But if you know, if anyone's going to be able to do it, Lewis Hamilton will be able to do it, because he overperformed at the weekend, because that McLaren was quick, but it wasn't as quick as the Red Bull. You know, it clearly wasn't, but Lewis Hamilton was just in another league, and he was head and shoulders the better driver compared to Vettel. You know, Vettel was quick, but just, you know, he couldn't do anything to touch Hamilton in terms of sheer class. But yeah, the whole incident with Carthagen was a bit... I can understand why Vettel's frustrated. You know, he's fighting for a championship, he wants to win the race, you know, anything that gets in his way is going to be an issue. But at the same time, even though I'm not Carthagen's biggest fan,
I believe you said he shouldn't be in Formula 1.
Yeah, I might have said something that's along those lines. Yeah, he couldn't really do anything, to be perfectly honest with you, short of you know, virtually stopping on track and exactly. letting Sebastian pass, and that could have been dangerous. So, you know, what do you do?
But of course, this moment is so key, because Fernando Alonso finished third in the race. If Vettel wins that race, Vettel is world champion. I've got that right, haven't I? Have I got that right?
Well, this weekend, yeah. Austin. If he'd won and Fernando Alonso had come fifth or lower.
Yeah. Okay. But obviously the task would have been a lot tougher this weekend.
Oh, it would have been win or go home in Brazil. Yeah, it would have been necessary. But now I think that's, as long as he finishes a certain few places ahead of Vettel, it's not necessary for him to take the checkered flag. It's going to be very interesting.
It is going to be very interesting indeed. We should obviously talk about Ferrari's audacity in effectively breaking the seal deliberately on Felipe Massa's gearbox so that he would take a five-place grid penalty and thus put Fernando Alonso on the supposedly, and I think it probably proved to be, grippier side of the grid. A flagrant breaking of the rules that Ferrari were completely upfront about as they did it.
Well, when we say breaking of the rules...
Yeah, they adhered to the rules by breaking the rules.
That's exactly right. And I don't... I'll put this out there very... I'll try and make it as clear as possible for you. I do not believe that what they did was sporting. But that is completely separate from the fact that they are well within their rights to do it. That works. They've worked... As David says, they've worked very well within the rules to make the rules work to their advantage. Is it sporting? No. Is it gentlemanly? No. It's not about making friends. It's about winning races. It's about winning championships. I don't agree with what they did, but I will defend their right to do it. And if you're going to allow team orders and you're going to allow that kind of, you know, setup, then you're going to expect teams like Ferrari, who have a clear-cut number one driver, to sacrifice their second driver, their backup driver, so that their number one driver can get ahead. What was the best thing Felipe Massa could do about it? Drive the wheels off the Ferrari, which he did.
Yes, you know, arguably drove better than Fernando.
And if you've got someone who can make that kind of performance when you deliberately knock them back five places, it makes sense to hold on to them, which Ferrari have now realised.
Yeah. I totally agree with Ped on everything that he said. I would probably just like to add that if I was in Ferrari's situation, I imagine I probably would have done exactly the same thing, because it is all about the championship. And if, you know, there's no chance that they're going to get the Constructors' Championship, then why not fight with every last gasp to get the Drivers' Championship? You know, Massa is, you know, not going to get, you know, it's not going to make a difference whether he gets an extra place or not, you know, but it does matter to Alonso for those extra few points. So, you know, I don't agree with what they did. It wasn't sporting, and yes, it affected other people unfairly, but they didn't break the rules. And if I had the opportunity and I was in Stefano Domenicali's shoes, I probably would have done the same thing.
But the point is this. Yes, we're all moaning about it now at this point, and at the time, you know, there are a lot of fans out there who are moaning about it. But in 10 years' time, if Fernando Alonso goes on and wins this championship, in 10 years' time, when he is introduced as the man to interview the drivers on the podium when they're racing at Monza and he's no longer racing, who's going to look at him and go, he only won his third championship because they pulled some shenanigans in America? No one. What they're going to remember is how he drove very early and dominant in the first half of the season, and how he was consistent enough, and that Ferrari were savvy enough to salvage a championship out of it. That's what people are going to remember from this. It's going to stand out, but it's not going to be remembered in a negative light. People are just reacting because a lot of people dislike the dominance Ferrari have had over the sport, and a lot of people find it hard to warm to Fernando Alonso.
And it's potentially kept that title fight alive, which is, as fans, is what we want, really, isn't it?
Maybe Bernie suggested it. But I have no issue with it at all, because it's a gamble. What they're doing is they're gambling. They, you know, it could have been the sort of perception of the grid on the start finish straight and what was grippier, the effect it would have had might not have quite come off. It was a gamble that they were giving, you know, a host of drivers a little step up the grid, ahead of Massa or whoever, and it could have completely backfired. Who knows? And the best thing, they were completely honest about it from the start. They said what they were doing and they did it. None of this lying and deceit and treating the people watching as fools, which was fine by me. The Circuit of the Americas.
Epic.
How good?
I'll bring that word back again into the EDP F1 podcast. It's
fine. I will step in here and issue a formal apology. I believe in our last podcast I stated this track wasn't designed by Herman Tilke, and it is designed by
we had this debate, didn't we?
It is designed in a very different way than he normally designs his tracks, so I will apologise for that misinformation that I fed the EDP F1 podcast universe.
But you were half right, because he wasn't the lead designer. It was his company, but I believe it was somebody who works for him that did the majority of the work, and he kind of oversaw it. So we were half right.
But what an iconic first turn, up the hill and back down again. Yeah. And the rest, I mean, from the first opening laps, it was clear there were several places you could overtake.
Yeah, everyone was saying that it was going to be difficult to overtake. You know, Jensen came out and said, "We think it's going to be hard to overtake, but it doesn't mean I'm not going to have a go." Which I thought, yes, that's the Jensen that I want to see.
And he did some cracking manoeuvres.
Exactly, and did see that. But actually, it showed that there were more than just one place that you could overtake. You know, you got the first corner. I can't remember the exact corners that there were some good manoeuvres done on, but you know, there was some great stuff. And you know, the S's after the first corner,
fantastic.
You know, you just think, when's it going to end? It's fantastic. You know, left, right, absolutely amazing.
Onboard camera shots going through those S's and that sort of the end of that first sector is just fantastic.
I mean, I'd go as far as to say that he's probably the best new track we've had in a decade.
Yeah, just
there's a lot of tracks.
That silence as we all just run it over.
Spot on.
That's fine. Well, the best thing I found about the track was when the race finished, you kind of found yourself a little breathless. You were kind of like, wow, that's done there. But the best thing that epitomised it for me was Lewis Hamilton's message to his team over the radio. He sounded like he'd just gotten off the world's best roller coaster.
Yeah.
Did he not? He sounded so happy. And he said, guys, that was amazing. Yeah. And he meant the whole experience. You could tell he loved driving that track. I don't think there was a single lap that he found boring. Everything about that track from turn 1 to turn 20, those drivers appeared to have really enjoyed. And that to me sort of summed it up, was Lewis Hamilton's attitude. He looked like and sounded like he'd just got off the world's best fairground ride.
Full grandstands, passionate fans there pretty much every day of the Grand Prix weekend. I know
lots of celebs.
Lots of celebrities, not all of them knowing exactly where they were or who they were looking out for. I know Formula One probably there's a bad perception of how America treats Formula One. I think there's a significant underground following for it. It's not a mainstream sport there, but there is certainly a following for Formula One in America. And this was a huge success. I mean, is this a properly... Now it's got a proper home for it as well. Is this a proper anchoring of Formula One in the States?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say whether or not they'll top this year in terms of, you know, because it's brand new, so it's new and exciting. But I don't think they'll dip much. And, you saw from the people that weren't going to that track that people were prepared to travel. You know, it wasn't just people who were sort of in the close vicinity. You know, people from all over America, Mexico, were all travelling up to watch the race. And there were quite a few people saying, actually, it's quite a coastal thing. You know, people on the east and the west coast, you know, they like their, you know, their IndyCar and all the other things, you know, and they appreciate F1, as opposed to its general centre people who are sort of in the mid-south and what have you, that prefer the sort of oval-style racing that you get from NASCAR and the other type of IndyCar. So, you know, I think you're right. There is a good potential following, and I think this is the best opportunity that America have had to have a permanent, solid, successful home for Formula One.
I think the key has been in how exciting this race has been, because the one thing that you know about Americans is they gear all of their sports to have big score lines, to have big lead changes and be successful. We go back to this old urban legend, or whether you're a football reporter, you can tell me, did they legitimately want to double the size of the goals for the USA 94 World Cup? You know, but it's that kind of...
No more than Diana Ross wanted to score that penalty in the opening ceremony in 1994, but carry on.
There you go. So, I mean, there is this perception that everything's bigger and better in America. You had the action and you had the enjoyment, but what I liked about the track was the way that they folded in and incorporated so much of American motorsport culture. You had the area for the RVs inside the track in the paddock, which is, you know, in NASCAR, that is a real tradition, coming and staying in your RV and having that area that's all dedicated to you. To incorporate that into the track is absolutely brilliant, because you're going to appeal to motor racing fans, not just F1 fans, not just NASCAR fans. But, I mean, you know, there are people out there who are petrol heads who, you know, we are all Formula One fans in here. We've all probably watched our fair share of touring car as well. Mm-hmm. You know, every now and then when Michael can, I'm sure he loves to sit down and watch some GP2. There's some cracking racing to be had out there outside of Formula One. But Formula One is the pinnacle. It's the top spot. It's top flight. You know, it's the Premier League. It's the Champions League. I don't know a lot about football, but...
You're doing a good job, Penn. It's fine.
Yeah. But that's where it is, you know. That is the top level. And the excitement value is what has really come out of this track. The fact that there was a lead change. The fact there was a lot of action further down the track. And those grandstands around that first corner, nice, wide first corner, you are going to see some bumps and bruises. But you're also going to see the cars slow right down. So you're going to get a really good look at these fantastic pieces of machinery as they go past you. The last thing you want is a grandstand on a straight, and that's all you see is a red blur as a Ferrari goes past. You really want to get a good look at it, and that's what it is. It's not just a race, it's a showcase.
So if I win the lottery this year, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to America and rent an RV, and I'm going to go to the American Grand Prix next year.
We'll do it. We'll podcast on site.
EDP F1 road trip, especially if you do win the lottery, David. You can pay for it.
Exactly.
All on the grid walk dime.
Okay, gentlemen, it's time for this. That's right, it's the EDP Pit Stops. Keep them short and sweet. We'll dip into these little tidbits. First up, Caterham. And whilst not exactly at the top end of the discussions from the weekend, Heikki Kovalainen has a record-equalling 59th failure to score a point. This is equaling the record set by Piercarlo Ginzi. I can't remember how to pronounce his name. But anyway, it's a record that the only way he won't have it to himself is if Caterham score a point in Brazil this weekend, which isn't going to happen.
Well, original forecast is for rain, and we all know that when it rains in Brazil, even if it's not actually raining on track, that track gets very green, and when the track is green, it is slippery, and if you're in the aftermath of rain, I mean, you know, the weather conditions are sounding good for Caterham to maybe be able to keep it on track and get a point.
It could be a yellow and green track then on the weekend.
It very much could be.
Well, I do hope it rains in Brazil, because I do love a wet Brazil track, especially if it rains down one side of the track, which we've had before, which obviously gave Hamilton his title in 2008.
Is David saying that he likes a wet Brazilian?
Anyway, Caterham's second half of the year has been fairly disastrous, hasn't it? And I'll bring this on to Mauritius as well, because the two Mauritians both out-qualified Caterham. I know Caterham then beat them in the race, but... It's been a stinker in the second half of the season, hasn't it, for Caterham?
Well, I suppose you could go by the old adage that Sunday is what counts and Saturday doesn't really matter if you pull the result out on the Sunday. I'm actually quite surprised at how well Marussia have managed to sort of come back at Caterham, because Caterham, although they've not managed to make any inroads into the Toro Rossos and the Force Indias, they did at one point. They were head and shoulders above the other guys that they started with. So, yeah, it was hats off to Marussia, really.
10th place. They need a 12th place finish, Caterham, in Brazil, to retake 10th spot in the Constructors' Championship. And to be honest, Heikki Kovalainen's drive for 2013 probably rests on whether they get that finish and a bit of extra money, or it might be that they'll just have to get someone in with a bit of budget anyway, which seems to be the perception.
Well, yeah, but he's still a top driver though, Heikki. I think he's, you know, if it was me, if I was in one of the you know, the midfield teams, I'd be seriously thinking, right, okay, let's see if we can poach him from Caterham, because he is a solid driver. You know, get him to sort of, you know, partner a young gun. You know, he's a good solid driver.
Well, that leads me on to Force India, who are probably the highest team with a seat empty, if we assume Romain Grosjean will still be driving for Lotus next year.
I'd say Sauber's probably, because Sauber have still got an empty seat.
Don't think it'll be Gutierrez.
And well, Gutierrez, but they're both seats are available. Oh no, because Hülkenberg's in. So, yeah, but still technically it's still a seat open. So yeah. Oh, I forgot about Hülkenberg. We talked about him last week as well.
We did.
Well, for Force India, I think they had quite a lengthy short list, or a long list, if you like, that involved the likes of Kovalainen and people like that. I think they've now suggested that alongside Paul de Resta will be someone bringing some money with them.
Yeah, I heard that Jack Villeneuve apparently was on the list, and that is not a joke. Apparently there was a list of 12 people and Jack Villeneuve was in there.
Dude, I saw that. But it'll probably be Jules Bianchi, won't it? GP2 and a bit of...
It would not surprise me if Force India went with someone who doesn't have any previous Formula 1 experience. It would make perfect sense for them to go where the money is. They've not made the strides that we were expecting to see from them this year. They've not been as consistent, they've not been as competitive. So if you're going, they're obviously looking at next season as more of a start over rather than build on what we had, because they haven't. You know, if they're going to build on anything, you'd like them to build on last season and not this season. Last season they looked far more competitive. So if they're going to bring someone in, it would make sense for them to bring in someone brand new and sort of not build from the ground up, but certainly from maybe the second or third floor and go up there.
Brilliant. These pit stops are all in a bit of a muddle, really. They're all sort of overlapping. It's like everyone's coming after a safety car and we've got no idea what's happening. But yeah, the suggestion at Caterham for next season, for 2013, is Guido van der Garde and Charles Peake. For 2013, both bringing budget, both you would probably say a bit of a removal from their current lineup. Heikki has said he won't go out to find a budget to secure a seat, and he's pretty much a driver who takes a salary at the moment, the days of which are numbered for him and the other drivers who probably quite like to do that.
But you could argue he does deserve it as well. So
exactly, no, I absolutely would agree with that. Lotus, as I mentioned, Romain Grosjean, yes or no answer, if you like, gents. Does he get the drive for 2013?
Yes.
Half of me wants to say yes, half of me wants to say no. So I'm kind of on the fence. I'm kind of on the fence because on one hand, he can be blisteringly quick, but also he's proven that he's still a little bit unreliable. So, you know, do you go with something, you know, something new, something fresh, that, you know, if he was a guaranteed point scorer every race, then you'd be silly not to go with him again. But, you know, because he's not really brought that much to the team, do you gamble and go, right, well, let's find the next new talent who is going to be blisteringly fast?
Sunday summed it up, I suppose. You either concentrate on the fact that without his spin he would have finished probably ahead of Kimi, and the fact or the fact that he spun in the first place.
Yeah.
One or the other.
Yeah, it's not the fact, I'm not debating that he's fast or not, because he definitely is fast. It's just whether or not he's consistent enough to warrant a top seat like Lotus.
Mercedes, there aren't a lot of rule changes between 2012 and 2013. Again, keep it short. How rubbish is that car going to be next year?
Better than this year, but not as good as it needs to be. And the only reason it's going to be better than this year is because of who's going to be behind the wheel, and that's Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, pretty much. I agree with Ped. Yeah, it's going to be pretty rubbish by McLaren standards, but it's probably going to be a step up from this year. Can't get much worse.
No, that would be pretty shocking. That would. And of course, we should mention Red Bull constructors' title, their third in three seasons, the first time that a constructor has won their first Constructors' Championship and then gone on to win the next two consecutively, I believe. It's not bad, is he, Adrian Newey?
Yeah, well, I was just mulling over your little fact there, and I think, yeah, you're right?
Right,
yeah. It took me a while to process it, because I was thinking, I'm sure there are plenty of manufacturers on three, but you said they're first, and then successfully.
Oh, three titles consecutively.
Yeah.
If you're going to have a stat, make sure it's a convoluted one.
Yes, exactly.
Well done, Red Bull.
Yeah. Congratulations out to the guys.
Needless to say, the guys at Milton Keynes have been exceptional in the work they have done from where they've come from.
Yeah, and we, you know, we go on about Red Bull every week and say how good they are at this, how good they are. But what we've got to remember is actually they don't have the budget of Ferrari and they don't have the budget of McLaren. So actually, really, what they managed to achieve every, you know, over the last 3 years is even more astounding, you know, than you would expect it to be any other way.
They do get to work all night because of the energy drink.
So of course,
the more they drink, they get more working hours in than the guys.
Yeah, but I suppose then they've got a shorter lifespan.
Because all the guys at McLaren are just the guys at McLaren are just really stacked because they just all drink Maxi Muscle, as is evidenced by what's on their cars. And Ferrari, they probably drink some Italian booze because I don't know.
I think they still smoke Marlboro, don't they? I think Marlboro still sponsors
Marlboro
them.
And Peroni. There we go, those were the EDP pit stops, which leaves us to have a highlight, driver and team of the Austin weekend. David.
Team is a difficult one because, and I'm going to be a little bit out there, I'm going to say Ferrari are my team of the weekend. Because although, you know, as we've just discussed, they've done a few things this weekend that some people might not agree with and people might be a bit outraged by, they still did the best with what they could do. So for
they get
me,
my vote.
They definitely get my vote. Driver of
the and his vote as well.
Yeah, but driver of the weekend for me is tied because I generally can't choose between three drivers, so they're gonna share the crown for me this week, and that is Lewis Hamilton, Jenson Button, Felipe Massa, because they were all outstanding in their own way, and yes, you know, Hamilton got the spoils, but I think, you know, what Massa and Button managed to do throughout the race meant that they were sort of almost up there. So yeah. Driver of the weekend, all three of them for me.
I think my driver would be Felipe Massa. I agree with the three you said, but the fact that Felipe just in an interview before the start of the race just said, "It's not easy to find a driver like me," and smiled. I thought, yes, Felipe. Yeah. And then he went and delivered brilliant stuff.
That was good.
Highlight, David, as well?
Highlight, I don't know, the whole thing really. It was kind of, you know, I can't really pick any one moment out purely for the fact that, you know, it was a great race from start to finish. Although one has just come to me whilst I'm saying that, and that is the moment when the grid girls gave all the drivers the Pirelli
Stetsons. Oh, he's nicked mine!
That's
Lewis Hamilton's face.
That was hilarious.
It was a neat little touch.
Yeah,
little touch.
And I did see a picture posted on Twitter this week, which was brilliant. Was saying Fernando Alonso was really, really happy because he, you know, he's a lover of big hats. And this week he got away with wearing two because he had his Ferrari cap on and then the Stetson over the top of it.
Brilliant stuff. Go on then, Ped.
Very, very similar ilk to how David has spoken, actually. Team of the weekend, I'm going to give it to Ferrari purely for the ingenuity of exploiting loopholes. Not to mention two drivers finishing, you know, third and fourth. That's very good. They second team in the Constructors' Championships. I mean, we didn't expect that. If the fight is between... You know, normally McLaren and Red Bull are up there because McLaren have that, you know, reliability, the continuity. They normally have good point scoring finishes, even if they're not winning championship for the driver. But Ferrari, for what they've done this weekend, they turned up and they delivered. And it was, I mean, let's not play this down. This was a big weekend for Ferrari, not just for Fernando Alonso's title hopes, but we're breaking Formula One into a brand new region, America. And the one team that's synonymous with Formula One and has been for many years is Ferrari. Ferrari don't perform well there, and that, you know, Luca di Montezemolo is not the happiest man in the world. So a lot riding on it for them, and I think they did very well, and especially their exploitation of the rules was top draw for me. And I think if, you know, you're going to do it right, and I think they did. Driver, I'm split between Massa and Button. You think Button because of how much of a dog he feels that car is and how much he hates it. But, you know, then turns around and starts whacking in fastest laps. He made his tyre strategy work, which was completely different to everyone else. And he qualified outside the top 10 and he still managed to come in fifth place, which is fantastic drive from him in a car that he hates. But then you go with Felipe Massa because he qualified well. He deliberately took a hit that you don't really think he had. I don't think he was the guy going up to the team bosses and going, "Do you know what, guys?
Yeah,
why don't we just scuttle, you know, scuttle my gearbox and then Fernando's away." Mm. I don't think that happened. And he drove brilliantly. And yeah, so I think I'm going to split it between them. They get 50-50 each for Felipe Massa and Jenson Button. So it's definitely the weekend of the second fiddles.
A highlight, something that stuck out.
The battle for first place was absolutely brilliant. You know, Hamilton was there. And I'll tell you what I enjoyed even more than watching Hamilton pass Vettel was Hamilton keeping that window between him and Vettel at 1.4 seconds. All of the commentators were sort of saying, why hasn't Hamilton scuttled away? Where's Vettel found this pace from? Because Martin Whitmarsh knows the kind of racer that Sebastian Vettel is. And he knows that if Lewis Hamilton stays 1.2, 1.3 seconds ahead, Vettel's going to push and push and push to try and get past him. And he thinks that if Vettel pushes too hard, maybe Vettel, you know, knocks out of the, you know, goes out of the race and Jenson Button gets bumped up a place. Maybe that's what he's looking at. Mm-hmm. So I think Martin Whitmarsh playing some head games with Sebastian Vettel there, and I thought that was absolutely great. But that battle for first place, sweeping round through those S's, where Lewis Hamilton was gaining so much time and you were on board with that car, it was a thing of beauty, it really was.
Fantastic then. So Brazil, the season climax. We have just two EDP F1 podcasts after this one, gentlemen. Brazil, Interlagos, great track. We all know about it, really. So it just leaves one question. Who comes out on top? Who walks away as Formula One Drivers' Champion 2012?
Is this going to be part of
this
the...
This does count as the Prediction League, but we'll do a race one as well.
If it does count, then it's going to be Sebastian Vettel.
Percentage game.
Yeah, if it's who I want it to be, then it'll be Alonso.
I just wonder if the gods have written it that this is six times in the last 30 years the championship has come down to the final race and the person who's been leading the championship has not won it.
Well, Vettel managed to do it in 2010. Raikkonen did it in 07.
That's right. So, I can't remember the other four.
And yeah, but yeah, it's definitely doable. Yeah, it's definitely doable. I really do hope that Alonso wins it because I think he thoroughly deserves it. The unfortunate thing is that Vettel thoroughly deserves it as well. So, you know, if whoever wins it will be a deserving man, I'd kind of like to see Alonso win it again anyway because I kind of. Throughout this 2012 season, I found myself liking him more and more, not just as a driver,
agreed,
and also as a person, sort of thing. So, yeah, but I think from a prediction point of view, I think it's a safe bet to go with Vettel.
One alternator failure.
Well, let me ask you this, Michael. If I get my prediction for the World Championship and race correct, can I win the Prediction League?
I don't know, actually. Probably not.
Then it's Alonso. Because if I'm not going to win the Prediction League, it doesn't matter. I genuinely think it's going to come down to it. And I think Alonso at some point is going to get his elbows out and force his way past maybe someone to get to the right place. I think it'll hinge on a pit stop issue, maybe something like that, some problems into the first corner. I mean, that first corner into Lagos is not easy. And unless Vettel is 3 feet ahead of everyone else going into that first corner, which is the only way he's going to do that is by getting pole, then he may be in trouble. And who knows what can happen? Anything can happen at that point in time. Here's the question, though. It's Vettel on it's Alonso on pole. It's Vettel in second place. Alonso looks like he's going to get that race. If they're both out, Vettel wins. Do we see another Ayrton Senna, Alain Prost, Michael Schumacher attitude going on here? Now, I don't think Seb's that kind of guy.
No, I think Seb would want to beat him on track.
I'm just saying.
The possibility. Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun?
Is out there. But the trick I'm going to lay on you now is the man who wins the World Championship is not going to be the man who wins in Brazil.
Who's that going to be?
Lewis Hamilton. Let's think about this. Seb Vettel, dominant in Asia. Yeah, won every single Asian race when they had the trot of them four on the row. Yeah. Lewis Hamilton, won in Canada, won in America. That side of the world, going down to Brazil, it's Lewis Hamilton.
Fair enough.
I'm telling you, Lewis Hamilton.
I think it's written in the gods that Alonso will win the championship. I don't know why. I just think it's the way it's written. Race winner?
Hamilton. Hamilton's going to win the race. Hamilton's going to win the race in Interlagos.
Jensen, this is all we're doing, predictions. Title winner, race winner.
Okay, alright,
bare bones,
let's keep it simple.
We'll double the points. It'll be like the
what's this old chestnut, like after the event, after I've made the predictions.
Well, do you not believe it?
No, I believe what I'm saying.
It's like the British Superbike, to just get 7,000 points. Brilliant.
So this is a difficult prediction to make because it is our last prediction of the season. You know, it's an important prediction, I think. And I'm going to go a bit left field. I'm
going to say, race written, he's going left field.
I'm going to go for a race win. I'm going to say Massa.
Oh!
Well, the only way that Massa's going to win this race is if Fernando Alonso's not on track.
Yeah.
That is the only way that's going to happen. So you're not only predicting a Massa win, you're predicting an Alonso DNF, which means you're predicting a Vettel championship.
I think by that point, Ferrari will be crying. They won't even notice what Massa's doing.
They won't care. Head in their They'll probably retire him from the league to prove a point.
But you can't change your mind now, so...
No, well, I don't know. I just have this weird feeling that after that Massa's on a roll. He does love Interlagos for obvious reasons. I think he's going to do really well there. So
I love it. Still love it.
But we know Ferrari's questionable when it comes to the rulings and things like that. Maybe Massa's ahead, and maybe Massa has a coming together with Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah, maybe Massa.
Maybe Massa is the gunner. Maybe Massa.
We might
the
not
high
be
gun.
Quite as easy on them if that happens compared to Austin.
No, I
agree. Yeah. I don't think that should happen. No. Let me put that out there. I don't believe in taking other drivers off the track. It's very dangerous. Formula One's worked very hard to get a real sort of gentlemanly sporting attitude. But if we've seen one team who's willing to work outside of that, it's Ferrari. And if the opportunity is there for Vettel to be overtaking Massa, and the team is going to be saying, you know, make it as hard as possible, and if you clip wheels, then you clip wheels.
Yeah. And also, you've got to bear in mind that, you know, if you look back in history, you look at the people who have won the Brazilian Grand Prix, you know, it's quite often someone who isn't, like, top of the championship. You know, it's quite often, you know, like Montoya won there how many years back, and he wasn't involved in the championship fight, and he had a great drive. And
it would be fantastic for Massa, the renaissance half of the season for him, to win in his home race.
Yeah.
I would love that. I would absolutely love Massa to win, but unfortunately I don't see it happening. If Alonso's on the track, it's not
going. My head says Hamilton, but my heart says Massa. So,
well, you're not having Hamilton, but brilliant, gents. We're going to leave it there. It's such a tantalising prospect, the final race of the season, to what has been an incredible season. Cannot wait. I'm sure you all can't wait for it too. We will be back the other side of Brazil to digest that. We will also have a final podcast probably about a week later, just to review the season, the winners, the losers, the highs, the lows, everything, anything with our EDP F1 crew. For now, thank you, David. Thank you, Ped, for your time.
Thank you.
We'll do a quick Twitter plug, because we do, and it's habitual. I'm at Michael J. Bailey. Ped?
I'm at PedHD56.
David.
And I'm at Gridwalk.
Don't forget, Caterham, Lotus News, and my weekly EDP Formula 1 column is at edp24.co.uk/F1. Plenty of bits and bobs there. Have a look. That is us. We will see you after Brazil and after the climax to a wonderful 2012 season. Bye for now.
About the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.